Life, politics, parenting, and navigating the daily chaos. It's time for Politely Rude with Abby Johnson.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's episode. This is episode number 4 of Politely Rude with Abby Johnson. I am so excited that you all have joined us for this amazing episode. And let me tell you something. As of today, this could be a little dated, but as of today, right now, I found out that I am number 68 on Apple in the news category. Let me tell you why I'm excited about that, because I am beating Joy Reid and Anderson Cooper's podcast. You know what? You can suck it, liberals. My podcast is brand new, and I'm already beating them. So just deal with it. You know, I am so pumped. That's not probably a very Christian thing to say, but I don't care, because we're politely rude here. And suck it is a politely rude thing to say, I think. So anyway, or just rude, whatever. So I am so excited that you all are with us. And I am so excited about the guest that we have a double. We have two guests today, husband and wife. And I'm so excited that they are with us. I say that every week. I'm so excited. It would suck if one day I was like, I am so bummed about the guests that we had here today. That would stink, right? Our guests this week are the worst. That's when you turn off my show. Anyway, our guests this week are amazing. They are friends of mine. I'm blessed to call them friends, and I'm really excited for you to hear their beautiful story. And their names are Jeff and Jennifer Christie. Welcome to Politely Rude.
Thank you so much.
Well, so I want everybody to know your story. I want everybody to hear your story. Your story is one of heartache, and it is one of difficulty, but it is one of such victory and redemption and beauty. And really, it just puts on display God's goodness and his faithfulness. And so why don't you guys tell us a little bit about who you are?
Sure. Our story, it is a difficult one, but we like to call it a love story. We say it's a love story between a mother and a child, and a husband and wife, and a loving God and his people. And that's the way we frame it. We're just an average family. Living out very average workaday lives. About 6.5 years ago, I'm a sign language interpreter, and we had 4 kids, and Jeff and I had been married 19 years at the time. And I went out of town on a business trip, and I was assaulted in my hotel room and brutally beaten and raped and left for dead. And we found out 6 weeks after the attack that I was pregnant. And the story got a lot of attention, mostly, I think, because of Jeff's response, which was, I told him I was pregnant. We knew it wasn't from him. He had had a vasectomy several years earlier. And he just said, okay. And I said, okay, what? And he said, this child is a gift. This is something wonderful from something terrible. We love babies, and this will be awesome when we can do this. And immediately, this became something that gave me back my smile. The child became an absolute light in the darkest time of my life. And for me, it was God smiling on me. And I knew then that I wasn't forgotten. I wasn't forsaken. And all of the why me's and the what ifs and if only and all of that sort of disappeared. And he became something very concrete that we could hold on to and hope for and look forward to. And he pretty much became something that really sort of pieced together the whole family and something very joyful.
Jeff, I feel like there's people probably listening to this and men probably listening to this. And, you know, I feel like they're all probably listening and saying, didn't you have these just overwhelming feelings of anger and rage and like wanting to just beat the ever living crap out of this person? And what, were you just always this like peaceful, like, all right, we're going to do it, babe? Or, you know, like, I mean, what going through your mind? Like, I mean, I'm sure there's guys listening to this, like, how did you just embrace this so quickly? I mean, was there a period where you were really like in a valley? Like, I mean, what was in your heart? Like, what were you going through during that time?
There was a lot of rage at the time. A lot of confusion. I really didn't know what I was doing or how I would be able to handle things. We had 4 kids already. My patients had already been tested, and I was doing okay with those kids. But this was a situation that we were not, neither one of us was familiar with.
We didn't know what to do.
I had spent my life taking care of my wife and my kids, and I couldn't take care of her at this point. I didn't know how to fix things. And that's one of the things that hit me at the time. And that is still true, is that when something like this happens, if something happens to your wife or your girlfriend like this, like it did to us, I can't fix it. And it felt like we were adrift for weeks. What she said about that 6 weeks later, finding out that she was pregnant, it seemed to put us back on solid ground.
It was familiar territory.
We didn't know how to deal with her being a victim of such a horrible crime, but we knew how to raise babies. We knew how to have a kid. And that's what we focused on. And he became, I mean, everything to us. He refocused what we were doing and where we were going. The pregnancy itself was not a good one. She's great at getting pregnant, not great at being pregnant. So we had problems with it. And she was on bed rest for the last couple months of that pregnancy. But once he was here, we were back to knowing where we were going and what we were doing. And it was just us raising our family again.
I can say too, I mean, I gave a very simplistic version of what happened, but I was very hurt in the attack. I had a brain bleed. I broke ribs and fingers. I had a lot of internal damage. So a lot of his focus was taking care of me. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know the extent of how bad I was hurt. And you know, I kind of hold up in the bedroom and I wasn't talking to anybody. I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. And time just sort of passed. And he'd be in the shower, you know, I'd hear him sobbing and like punching the walls and coming out with bloody knuckles and smiling at me and being like, it's okay, we're going to get through this. But he wasn't okay. And I wasn't okay. It wasn't like, you know, it's all right, honey, it's all fine. And I know that's been sort of portrayed in media and comments and things like that, that what kind of guy is just like, oh, it's okay, fine, a rape baby, that's great. And that's not the way it was, you know, but yeah, first of all, he was never a rape baby. It was ours from the beginning. It's like, okay, my wife is pregnant, we're having a baby. But the trauma and the intense emotions surrounding the rape, that was bad. That was bad. We didn't know how to do that, but babies we knew. Babies we loved, babies we knew. And that was familiar. And like he said, that put us back on the solid ground. Yeah.
Was there ever a time where you thought abortion would be easier than this?
No, I had one moment of doubt when I was in labor where I said, what if he comes out and all I see is the rapist? You know, like I just everyone's comments like just suddenly came to me when I was in labor. And Jeff was like, you've never wondered this before. You've never worried about that. And I'm like, what if everyone is right? Because so many people were like, this is the wrong decision, Jen. This is the wrong decision. And he said, if that happens, we'll deal with it. We'll get through it. That's what we do. And I said, yeah, you're right. That's what we do. But it's never happened. I don't connect him with what happened. Like I do have triggers and flashbacks and things like that, but never with him. He just seems like a completely, he's just one of our children. He's a completely separate thing from what happened.
So that is a question that I had, because that is something, I mean, I think it's, your story is important, but you know, I love you not because of your story. I love you just because you're fantastic and amazing and all of those things, right? But I think one of the reasons that your story really touches people is because we hear this talk all the time in the pro-life movement that women who conceive children in rape, they can't possibly have those children because those children are just going to remind them of their rapist. And so I think your story makes people uncomfortable.
It definitely does.
Because you're looking at people and you're going, no, that's BS. No, he doesn't. You know, my son reminds me of me. My son reminds me how much strength I have. My son reminds me how awesome my family is, mm-hmm. right? Like, because my son is us.
Right. Right?
Not my rapist. Like, right. That's not who he is. And that flies in the face of these arguments that are not just being made by people who support abortion. They're being made by pro-lifers.
60% of pro-lifers, in fact, have a rape exception and feel very strongly about a rape exception.
And so your story is, I think it offends their sensibilities, right?
Sure.
How could a woman who conceives a baby in such a violent way then love that baby? It's beyond their comprehension. But then when you look at your son, all you see is love.
Right. I think that this is something that's so important. You know, we get criticized all the time for, you know, you show his picture, you show videos of him, and that's so exploitive. And I mean, we didn't, obviously don't think it is. The whole point of showing him is showing that he's just a kid. He's right. Just a kid. He's a happy, loving, joyful kid, and he's just part of our family. You know, he doesn't have horns. He doesn't have, there's nothing strange about him. There's nothing obscene about him. And maybe by showing his face, the next time someone talks about a rape baby, the next time someone uses the term rape spawn, you know, maybe rather than seeing numbers and percentages and saying, well, it's just, you know, 0.5% or whatever, they'll see his little face and they'll think twice. And we've heard from so many people who have said, I used to believe in a rape exception, you know, but I can't now because I see him, I see your family. And it does make a difference once you humanize somebody. You know, it's a lot harder to say, well, it's just 0.5%. Why are we even talking about it? When it's a human being, when it's a child, when it's a life, when it's a family, it's a lot, it's harder to stomach. But it's interesting that we don't do the same with domestic violence victims. We don't do, you know, well, you don't want to have that baby. It'll remind you of their partner. And we don't do that. It's only with rape. Well, he'll remind you of this. He'll remind you of, and it's just, I've spoken with hundreds of women who conceive in rape, and that's just not the case. Not that it couldn't ever happen or doesn't ever happen, but it's not typical.
Well, and there's research to back it up, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So, and this is what I always tell people when they ask me about the rape exception. So first of all, I always, you know, I talk about people like you. I talk about your story. I talk about your son. But also what I tell people is, you know, I'll ask them, do you consider yourself to be pro-woman? And undoubtedly, every time they're going to say, well, yes, of course, right? Like, how could you even ask me that before? Right? And I'll say, okay, great. Me too. And so I start talking about these studies that have been done. And the woman who has done the majority of the studies, she's a researcher named Dr. McCorn. And she's done these really significant studies in this area, all peer-reviewed research. And she has done studies showing the emotional effects on women who have conceived from rape And she shows the emotional effects based on the choices that they have made, whether they have parented, whether they have placed for adoption, or whether they have chosen abortion. And what she has found categorically across the board is that women fare significantly better emotionally if they choose to parent their children or place their children for adoption over having an abortion. Now, if I'm a woman who is pro-woman, if I am a person who claims to be a pro-woman advocate, how can I then, knowing what's out there, knowing this peer-reviewed research is out there and available to be found and read, how can I then, knowing what I know, say, well, I want a woman to choose an option that is going to be more emotionally damaging for her? I can't, right? Not if I'm pro-woman. I can't. And so when I tell people that, they're like, oh. And so then the next question becomes, well, why? Why would it be damaging for them to have an abortion? And that's sort of what I want to talk about next. I mean, you know, being sexually assaulted, of course, is an incredible violation against your body. And so then you walk into an abortion clinic
and undergo a second violation.
Exactly.
And somehow we've bought this rhetoric that violence on top of violence equals healing. And it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that after you've undergone significant violence and a violation, that to add a violation on top of that, well, that'll make it better. And the line that, you know, if you keep the child, then you'll never be able to forget. The implication is that if you have an abortion, that you'll somehow forget. And that's ridiculous. You know, well, if you have the baby, then you'll always have this reminder. I'm like, if you don't have the baby, you'll always have this reminder because you were raped. That stays with you. You know, that's your take home prize. That never goes away. But if you also have an abortion, then you have an additional trauma to be reminded of, like, forever. You have that too. So I think that it's so important as pro-lifers to change the framework, to change the way we talk about these children. We're calling these children created in the image of God rape babies and rapist babies. And perhaps if we didn't do that, if we were able to remove the stigma a little bit, when a woman becomes pregnant from rape, her natural instincts of defensiveness and protectiveness and feeling like this is my baby wouldn't be so muddled by everything that she's heard her whole life, which is, you know, rape spawn and evil DNA and all those kind of things. And when you can't go to pro-life people and get the support, I mean, that's horrible that you can't depend on pro-life people for support. You'll hear, like we did, well, God will understand. Well, this is why we have, you know, this is why we have abortion. Well, in this instance, it would be okay.
Right.
And that's not the kind of support that she needs at this most incredibly vulnerable time.
Well, and the church.
And the church.
I mean, we don't even have, I mean, there's denominations that support abortion in cases of rape. And I get where, you know, and I can say, you know, when I first left Planned Parenthood, I remember thinking, well, I mean, you just can't possibly, you know, tell a woman that she can't have an abortion in that situation. I remember feeling like I was coming from a place of compassion.
Right, exactly.
So I remember that feeling, but then I remember sort of confronting it and I remember exactly what did it. It was a poster and it had an ultrasound image. It had two ultrasound images of babies and it just said which one was conceived in rape. And I remember looking at it and just something so simple.
Right.
I remember looking at it and I was like, huh. I mean, I don't know, right? And either it's a baby all the time or it's a baby none of the time.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, I think I really wish we could be consistent, because I don't know how we could be taken at our word if we're trying to insist that a life is a life is a life, and it's valuable, and it has worth, and it matters. And well, okay, but most of the time, we'll give you those. We'll give you those babies. You can have those. But most of the time it matters. I mean, how?
Well, it's incredibly inconsistent, and nobody can take us seriously. Exactly. I mean, and that's, I just remember thinking like, oh my gosh, I'm a total fraud. I mean, like, what am I doing? Like, I'm not really pro-life. If I don't believe a life is a life is a life, I'm out here saying I believe in the inherent dignity and value of every child conceived at the moment of conception. Well, except for these.
Right.
Like, I'm a total fraud. I'm still a fraud. Like, I left Planned Parenthood, but I'm still a fraud. Right. Yeah. And that was very early into my journey. But like, I just remember thinking like, no, that's ridiculous, Johnson. Like, no, like you can't believe that, you know? And then, you know, as I got into the political process more and learned about all of the deals that are made, as politicians to keep rape exceptions in bills.
Right.
And that made me sick.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother like podcast, but
podcast, yeah.
The deals that are made with politicians, with Republican politicians, and the deals that are made with national pro-life organizations,
yeah,
to keep exceptions in bills. And it just made me sick. And I was like, I will never support another bill that has a rape exception in it. It's unnecessary, it's ridiculous, and it's a violation of who we are as pro-lifers. And it was interesting because then just a few years ago, I have a friend who's a journalist for BuzzFeed, and where as far as, you know, from the left is from the right, yeah, politically, but somehow we're friends. And she came to me and she said, you know, Abby, she said, I know everybody thinks you are like totally extreme, right? Like you won't support any bills that have a rape exception. You're, you know, 100% pro-life. You don't believe in exceptions for anything whatsoever. Like you're, you know, I know everybody thinks you're sort of crazy and sort of fringe because of that, right? She said, but I have to tell you, I really respect the heck out of you because of that. She said, because the one thing I don't respect about the pro-life movement is their incredible inconsistency on life. And she said, I just can't respect the pro-life movement if they're willing to give up some babies,
right,
for others. And I thought, that's exactly what we have been doing,
right,
for all of these years. We're willing to give up the 1 or 2% to save the others. And I just can't imagine that God is pleased with that. No. I can't imagine that God's like, yeah, it's fine. Like, make a deal like that. It's fine.
It's only a few of them. It's only 20,000 a year. And we get accused of, you know, you're making an emotional argument. You can't get emotional. This is politics. This is the way that we win. This is incremental. This is necessary. And I'm like, of course I'm making an emotional argument. This is emotional for me. This is my child. How am I supposed to tell him, oh, it's just, you know, just kids like you. And, you know, we're going to protect all of them except for you. Don't take it personally. You know, it's not personal. You know, of course it's personal. It's very personal. These are people. And so it's just, it's not okay. There's no
way. But even if it wasn't your son, it's personal because these are people.
They're people. Yeah.
These are real people. These aren't like, freaking like frogs. Okay. These are human beings.
Right.
That are being led to the slaughter because of how they were conceived. I mean, as if they weren't created in the image and likeness of Christ. Like, no. I mean, it's wrong. And the reality is that we don't have to have rape exceptions in bills.
No.
And everybody needs to listen to me when I say this. I'm fired up now. Rape exceptions are put into pro-life bills by pro-life Republicans. They are not put into bills by Democrats. Democrats don't make deals with Republicans because Democrats want the bill gone altogether. Democrats are not going to support any sort of bill that restricts abortion in any way. These exceptions are put into bills by legislators who have endorsements from groups like National Right to Life, like all these other national groups. These are your pro-life legislators that are putting in rape exceptions, and they continue to get the endorsement of these national groups year after year after year. And they will continue to put them in these bills until people vote them out, until pro-lifers actually hold them accountable and say, no, we are not going to vote for you if you keep marginalizing children in the womb. I don't care how many it is, but if you are going to keep marginalizing even one, then we will not vote for you anymore. And that's exactly what has happened in some states. That's exactly what happened in the state of Georgia. Georgia Right to Life broke off from the national group, and they said, we will not endorse any politician that votes for or includes rape exceptions in bills. And guess what? They have not had one bill pass with a rape exception. They changed their state legislature. It's just that simple. But people aren't willing to do it because they just want to go with the status quo. They just want to go with what they know instead of standing up and doing the hard thing. And that's what I love about you guys. That's what I love about you, Jennifer and Jeff, is that you're willing to stand up and you're willing to do the hard thing. Because I know that what you guys do is hard. I know all of the crap that is thrown at you guys because of what you do. I know the terrible things that are said to you about your precious little boy. And I know that has to hurt because I'm a mom. Yeah. And I know that has to hurt. And I just think that what you do is so important. I think it's so beautiful. It is changing people's minds. It is, and not just that. I mean, you're saving lives. Tell people about what you do now.
Okay, so we our page is called Love Louder, and that was that came out of questions of what are you going to tell your son one day. Usually a challenge, like you did something so great, what are you going to tell him? And we said, well, we're going to tell him that at the time that we found out about you, there were all these voices telling us, you know, you should not be here. You're a child from rape. You do not deserve to live. And those voices were loud, but we loved you louder. And so that sort of became the tagline that associated, you know, became associated with us and what we do. And so there's really not a lot out there in the pro-life movement for women who are just brutalized and just raped, and whether you become pregnant or not, there's not really a lot out there in the way of resources. And so I decided to become what I needed at that time. And so Love Louder is incorporating and becoming an affiliate with a wonderful organization called Pro-Love Ministries. And we are going to be that touchstone for women who are broken after they are assaulted and just need to know that they can survive it, that they're going to be okay. And whether or not they become pregnant, whether or not, regardless of the choice that they make after that, we're going to be there to love them and to pick them up and to just to be there for them every step of the way. So that's what we want to do.
That's awesome. Because really, it's like you said, there really is nothing else like this out there. And most of the time, I mean, you tell us, when a woman is sexually assaulted, let's say she goes to a hospital, and what's the speech? I mean, what is the speech that she gets usually?
Well, I mean, if you go through the rape kit and stuff, you get...
Which, first of all, is very traumatic.
Oh, it's horrible. Right? It's a horrible process. You're poked and you're prodded and you're photographed and it's scraped and clipped and it's humiliating and it's several hours long. and you talk to detectives and you're asked all kinds of questions and you don't really know. And it was, you know, I was very hurt, and I was told at the time, basically, you know, this happens a lot. I wouldn't expect justice. The guy's probably left the state. And it was kind of like, you find a way to pick up and move on. Like, don't really, you know, and there's, Jessica, get over it. Kind of like, that's kind of the way they tried to say it nicer, but that's kind of the way they basically, your speech is, you know, good luck to you, pick up and move on. And you're left with hospital bills. You're left with an immense amount of trauma. Some hospital pills offer you a morning after pill. I'm not an advocate of it. I wouldn't take it. And then that's basically, you're sort of on your own. They do have, you know, you might have a sexual assault trauma nurse there. But I did go to a group briefly, but when I became pregnant and tried to go back, they said, you can't talk about your pregnancy. And there were women, do you remember that? Yeah. But there were women in the group who'd had abortions after rape, and it would upset them. And I said, I'm not trying to say anything to upset them, but why can't I talk about the pregnancy? And I'm like, are they allowed to talk about their abortions? Yes. What if that would upset me? So there's nothing for you. And the worst thing, I think, about right after being raped, the worst thing is feeling alone. And then especially finding out you're pregnant, you just feel like there's no one else in the world who's ever been through that.
Yeah. When I feel like, I mean, a lot of what these women need is just, I mean, they need someone to just hear them.
And people sometimes, I mean, who've been raped years prior will reach out to me through my page and they just want to tell me, like, they just want to say it. They don't, they're not public. They just want to talk to someone who's experienced it. And I'll talk to them, I'm talking to several women now. They just want to talk, and they just want to hear that somebody understands that they're heard, that they're seen. They need some kind of validation, you know, and they need to know that they can survive it, that it will get better, and that they matter, and that they didn't do anything wrong, that no matter what they did, if they fought, if they didn't fight, if they survived it, then they won.
Right. You know, I talk about a lot with And Then There Were None, how there's just sort of one of the things I think that we're able to offer women who come through our ministry is just, it's sort of an experience of shared grief. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's probably what you're able to offer these women as well. It's just a shared grief because there is a loss there. And it's something that I can't understand, right? But you can.
Right.
And just feeling like I need to share this and I need to be able to share it with somebody who's not going to gasp.
Right. Right.
Or somebody who's not going to be like, really, oh my gosh, you know, and grab their chest, right? Mm-hmm. Or clutch their pearls, right? Like somebody who's just going to understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like that's just a huge, and that's a huge part of healing too. Just being able to share with someone who really understands that loss and understands that grief.
And I think you benefit from talking to women who are in different parts of your journey and being able to say that it's okay to not be okay. You know, I mean, several years down the road to not have healed, mm-hmm. and not to let other people dictate how you should heal and what that should look like, because I let that happen. You know, I've heard, well, you're healed now and you're all better, and I wasn't. And I think it's really important to be able to speak out about that. And so I try to encourage some of the women who come to me, like, let someone know if you're not okay. And there's no shame in that. This is not something you band-aid. Like, this is a wound that bleeds for a really long time.
Right. Right. And it's okay if you're not okay.
Right.
It's okay to not be okay. Well, I just want to thank you guys so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. I mean, you guys are heroes to me and to so many others. And just thank you for your vulnerability and your transparency and just your life and who you are. You're both just amazing. And just for being you. You're awesome.
Thank you for having us. So are you.
And everybody, where can they follow you? I want everybody to follow you and know who you are and all that. So where can they go follow you?
You can follow us at Jeff and Jennifer Christie. Love Louder is our Facebook page. That's where we are most of the time. So that's the best place to follow us.
Awesome. And let me tell you, Jennifer is like the most amazing ASL interpreter. Like she interprets like songs and she does like music videos. They're like amazing. And she's so good at it. And she's good at everything. She's amazing. So anyway, and probably because she's got such a good husband backing her up too. So
that's right. Oh, now he sparks up.
So thank you though, Jeff, for all the amazing support that you provide to Jennifer. And so anyway, thank you both so much for being here and for everything you do. We appreciate you and just keep using your voice. I know you will. You're changing a lot of lives and a lot of hearts. Thanks for being on the show.
This podcast is part of the Edify Podcast Network. Edify is a faith-inspiring app that brings together thousands of the best Christian podcasts in one place for your listening enjoyment. Cut through the noise and grow your faith by diving into the world's top Christian podcasts today. Download the Edify app for free from the App Store or Google Play, or by going to edify.app. That's edifi.app.
Everybody, I hope you were just really touched by that story. I hope that it helps you. I hope that it increases your awareness about this issue. I hope that if you are a person that has said before, you know, well, I'm pro-life accepting, I hope that that is not you anymore. I hope that you realize what a ridiculous position that is to take on the issue of life, that it is cowardly, that it is inconsistent, that it is ungodly, that it is ridiculous. And I hope that you feel convicted on this topic and that you will advocate for all life, no matter how someone was conceived. I hope that you understand that all life is created in the image of God, our Father, and that He does not make mistakes when He creates life. And so I am just, I love those two people so much. And I love that they share their story so openly with people so that they can learn and that they can get a different opinion and they can see the reality so that people can see the reality behind what they believe. And if people do believe this way, if they do believe in exceptions, that they will see that that is the wrong way to believe, because there's no other way for me to say it. It is a wrong belief. It is wrong. It is not Christ-like. It is wrong. And so if that is you, I hope that you've been convicted. If you're mad at me about this, don't care. If you're mad, that means you're convicted. That means that your conscience is pricked in some way. I hope you take it to prayer, because I believe that God will convict you. And, you know, these are children that need us. They need our voice and they need us to stand up for them. So I hope that you have enjoyed this episode. Please go follow Jeff and Jen. Please go follow their ministries and support them any way that you can. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Politely Rude with Abby Johnson. And please join me next time as we will have yet another fantastic guest. You will not want to miss it. God bless you all. Have a wonderful next few days and stay safe.
Thanks for listening to Politely Rude with Abby Johnson on the Edify Podcast Network. Tune in next time for another powerful exploration of life, politics, parenting, and tips for navigating the daily chaos. And for more faith-inspiring podcasts, download the Edify Podcast app on the Apple and Google Play Stores or at edify.app.